50 years ago this week, theater goers got their chance to see Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
There. It is I, Arthur, son of Uther Pendragon from the castle of Camelot, king of the Britons, defeater of the Saxons, sovereign of all England. We have ridden the length and breadth of the land in search of knights who will join me in my court at Camelot. I must speak with your lord and master.
What, ridden on a horse?
Yes.
You're using coconuts.
What?
You've got two empty halves of coconut and you're banging them together.
So, we have ridden since the snows of winter covered this land. Through the kingdom of Mercia, through...
Where'd you get the coconuts?
We found them.
Found them? In Mercia, the coconut's tropical.
What do you mean?
Well, this is a temperate zone.
The swallow may fly south with the sun, or the house martin or the plover may seek warmer climes in winter, yet these are not strangers to our land.
Are you suggesting coconuts migrate?
Not at all. They could be carried.
What? A swallow carrying a coconut?
It could grip it by the husk.
It's not a question of where he grips it. It's a simple question of weight ratios. A 5-ounce bird could not carry a 1-pound coconut.
Well, it doesn't matter. Will you go and tell your master that Arthur from the court of Camelot is here?
Listen, in order to maintain airspeed velocity, a swallow needs to beat its wings 43 times every second, right?
Please!
Am I right?
I'm not interested.
It could be carried by an African swallow.
Oh, yeah, an African swallow maybe, but not a European swallow, that's my point.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
And they go on and on. Michael Phillips, thank you. Thank you for reminding us of how fun that movie is.
I mean, you know, that was a big... That was a big night in my life as a 14-year-old when I first saw Monty Python and the Holy Grail in 1975 in a suburban Milwaukee theater. I mean, I would not wait for it to come to Racine, Wisconsin, 30 miles south. It was impossible to conceive of the idea of waiting.
Yeah,
because I was a huge fan of the TV show, but my Lord, John, that is the verbal wit of that movie. One of the things I love about it, it's low comedy. It's this really kind of artful verbal comedy. It's
yes.
Every kind of comedy. I love it still.
The headline of your piece, dated April 30th, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, showed us what comedy needs and doesn't. And then you wrote about it from a cinematic standpoint and a personal one. It's a lovely story about you and your friend driving to Milwaukee to see it. And here's just a little Easter egg laid in your story. The Holy Grail production budget, around $300,000 in the year of production, 1974, equates to $2 million today. $2 million. And you write, members of Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, and Jethro Tull put up most of the funding, by the way. I didn't know that. That's crazy.
I had forgotten that fact, and I need to do a little more research on exactly it's available. I know about the story behind it. I think, you know, among other people, I think one of the songwriters, Neil Innes, he was a musician. He knew these guys in the bands, and London is a very small town, John. You know, like every aspect of show business is all within, you know, three pubs of each other in London.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just think, you know, and my God, they were, the TV show was a huge success on the BBC and then here in America. They had fans when they made Holy Grail, and they made a lot more when they released it in the U.S.
Isn't
yeah,
it a way,
love it.
A way to gauge the endurance of a movie is years later, are we still quoting lines? So, you know, Caddyshack or movies like that, but it's just a flesh wound. I think people know it's just a flesh wound, and they don't even know where it comes from.
Right, right. And I hadn't heard until I saw the movie straight through for the first time in a long time, just the other day. I had forgotten just like how kind of wonderfully long that whole coconut routine goes on, where King Arthur's basically turned to dust by the argumentative prowess of this peasant who just doesn't like the coconut scheme. And I love the idea of why we had that coconut bit in the first place in that movie. They just didn't have the money for horses.
So there he is, you know, with his knight regalia on, the robe and the helmet and the sword, but he's just sort of dancing with his hands in front of himself the way a child would skip, like pretend you're on a horsey. And then behind him is the guy doing the coconuts. And I love how patient they were with that bit. I mean, I edited it for radio. It goes on longer than that.
It's a considerable amount of the movie's 80-some minute running time.
Think about it. Okay, so 50 years ago this week, Monty Python. Does that stream everywhere? Can I go out and watch it tonight, Michael?
You can't. You can see it at home, all over the place, anytime. And it is coming back to theaters on May 4th and May 7th in a Fathom Entertainment, kind of a retrospective screening or two. They're all over town those two nights, May 4th and May 7th. So, I think the idea of seeing it with an audience is just better, period.
Oh, yeah. We laughed at that.
Yeah, interesting time, you know. I mean, right around that mid-70s time, Mel Brooks doing his thing with really, really a whole different kind of pastiche and parody. And then you had this sort of as the gold standard from across the Atlantic.
Well,
it was a great time for comedy.
Is 1975 seen as a great year? Because you mentioned that's when Jaws came out, right? Did Godfather come out around then, too? Is that a big year in cinema?
First one was 72, and then Godfather 2 was 2 years later in 74. But 75 was a great year for film. I mean, yeah, Jaws was great for huge popular successes that were also terrific. I mean, Jaws is hard to beat, and I think we should probably be talking about Jaws, John, in a different show, because that anniversary is coming up, you know, in a matter of weeks, for God's sake.
Now stand aside, worthy adversary.
'Tis but a scratch.
A scratch? Your arm's off.
No, it isn't.
Well, what's that then?
I've had worse.
You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look!
Just a flesh wound.
Just a flesh wound. Chops off his arms, chops off his legs. He's still fighting. Still belligerent. We're talking to Michael Phillips, the film critic at the Chicago Tribune. Read online or in print. His 50 years ago, Monty Python and the Holy Grail showed us what comedy needs and does not. I guess you knew all about the fact that we don't recognize regularly stunts in the Oscars, and that they have said that starting in 2027 for the 2028 ceremony, they will. Is that right, Michael?
That's right. And the stunt community in Hollywood has been agitating for this inclusion, creation of a new awards category for the Oscars for a long time now. And I think it's great. I mean, it's one of the reasons, I honestly think it's one of the reasons I got, you know, so interested and really fell in love with the movies at a young age was just the kind of physical amazements you'd see that really didn't have much to do with special effects, but had a lot more to do with insane risk-taking caught by the camera. And then, of course, we tried to recreate these stunts around the neighborhood and, for weeks afterwards.
Yeah. Well, we didn't. But I always thought that what we see on the screen isn't real. It's never so dangerous or fast or furious. I guess sometimes it is, huh?
Yeah. And I mean, there's been a sobering number of fatalities in the name of movie making over the years. I mean, you know, James Bond film, you had a bobsled, kind of pilot, I guess you call it, die. I mean, somebody died during the filming of Top Gun. I mean, just it goes on and on. I mean, Deadpool 2 lost a stunt person. I mean, it's just remarkable. And, you know, that's kind of the, you know, the very kind of like painful part of this. But it's a lot of the history of old Hollywood, especially. And old doesn't have to mean silent era. It can mean all the way up through, you know, the Roger Moore Bond years, which wasn't that many decades ago, or Fast and the Furious. I mean, somebody died during one of the filming of one of those. So, yeah, it's a tricky one. And these days, John, I think our eyes really are shown a very sophisticated but somewhat less interesting mixture of practical stunts, meaning real, actual physical risk-taking stunts, hopefully, you know, safely prepared, plus a lot of digital futzing, and it's by design, kind of a mixture. And it's, you know, it can be beautiful and kind of startling and great, and a lot of it just makes me want a simpler time. So,
but it won't be Tom Cruise.
Old men talk.
Tom Cruise won't get the award. It'll be the guy that designed the stunt, right? Who came up with it and did the math and engineering and built the thing. There's somebody who's in charge of that, right?
Right, and I think it's more like, you know, stunt coordination or stunt design. I think they actually have played around with different actual wording for the credits on this. But if you look at something like the latest John Wick film from a year or two ago, that's a tremendous amount of largely practical old school stunt work going on, which I think people responded to. I mean, I don't love that movie necessarily, but the stunt work I really do appreciate. Same with Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh my gosh.
Huge, elaborate, and you know, very kind of very sophisticated technologically.
Okay, but in Mad Max, in Fury Road, they are riding in fast moving vehicles, hanging on poles, going back and forth, throwing spears at each other. That was actually happening, right?
Right. It is, and it's a little bit. It looks a little bit deceiving in that there's a. The film is slightly sped in a way, and it's kind of a.
I'll give them
kind
that.
Of a touch. Yeah,
I'll
touch
give them
love,
that.
But yes, it's all practical.
So I was just looking through some of the sites that you suggested I look through, as well as some others, just to refresh my memory. The chariot scene in Ben-Hur, the ski jump scene in The Spy Who Loved Me, 1977, when Harrison Ford is running away from that great big boulder rolling down against him in Raiders of the Lost Ark in 1981. A lot of people mention Michelle Pfeiffer whipping the mannequins in Batman Returns. I think that's just because they want to see her in that leather outfit again. Tom Cruise hanging off a plane in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. I would say the Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning scene where he rides the motorcycle into the canyon and then the parachute opens up is the craziest thing. What jumps out at you? And if I say, quick, great stunt scenes, what does Michael Phillips remember?
I go back to somebody who would not win an Oscar for it because he was the star, but you have to go back to Buster Keaton in the Silent Years. You look at some of the stuff he did in Steamboat Bill Jr., when the house literally, the whole side of the house literally falls on him, and if he had been 2 inches to the left or right, he would not have hit the open doorway, or vice versa.
Yep.
Amazing.
It is.
Work in Sherlock Jr., some of the stuff with the motorcycle. I mean, it's just, he is my paragon of physical comedy that's really physical. and he's just a genius stuntman, the first great stuntman movie star.
You saw Sinners and gave it a pretty good review.
Yeah, I like Sinners. Yeah. Have you seen it?
No, and I'm anxious to. And you and Pete have the same tone in your voice about it. Yeah, I liked it. It was good. I want to be blown away. I want to be spellbound. And I was under the impression that this was going to be more than just a pretty good movie.
Well, I mean, it's good. It's kind of seven movies in one, which I don't think is a flaw. It's just kind of a fact. I think Ryan Coogler really is a popular filmmaker who, with the Black Panther series, especially the first Black Panther, and you know his film Creed. I mean, talk about a movie that revived a franchise you thought was dead, the Rocky franchise. And I mean, there's a lot of great stuff in Sinners. It's a little messy, but it's the kind of mess that only a really first-rate filmmaker can come up with. And I happily saw it twice, John, to kind of figure out a little more. Yeah, so check it out. See what you think.
You wrote, Michael B. Jordan delivers a career-defining double turn as twin brothers Smoke and Stack. So, yeah, I'm all in. Let's you and I reconnect on the anniversary of Jaws, or maybe sometime in between. It's always nice to read you, and it's always nice to talk to you, Michael Phillips.
Thank you, John. A pleasure as always.
Yeah, stay well.